Hi, this is Meredith Foster. This is the Epic Podcast. Enjoy.
During that period of time, I like to describe it as my mom being slave to the world. She struggled with drug addiction, and that is what took my place in our relationship together.
Everybody has a story, and everyone is a chapter, a piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since the beginning. It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope,
and power.
It has many characters.
And so you and I are
a part of it.
We're not the hero. This is Epic.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. When someone you love is in the throes of drug addiction, there is a cost. For Valina Claiborne, her mother's drug use brought a very high price. She lost her job, their home, most of their possessions. But the even bigger cost for Valina was the loss of trust, the anger, disappointment, not just in her mom, but in a God who gave her a mom like this. This is Chapter 19 of Epic, Valina Claiborne's story. So tell me a little bit about your relationship with your mom when you were younger. What was your family like?
Yeah. So our family was really interesting. I was the only girl for 7 years before my oldest brother was born. We're 7 years apart. And we really valued like spending time together, you know, Sunday dinners after church, you know, picnics every holiday, just a lot of family time together. So her and I were close because it was just the two of us.
You'd
for a really long
baby
time.
For a long time.
For a long time. And, you know, my parents got divorced when I was 2. And so it was her and I for a really long time before she met my brother's father. And that is when I feel like our relationship started to take a turn. During that period of time, I like to describe it as my mom being slave to the world. She struggled with drug addiction. And that is what took my place in our relationship together.
Was that new for her? I mean, did she just got introduced to drugs when you were about 7 or 8?
Yeah, when I was about 7 or 8 years
okay.
old. So just picture family picnic like we always have, gathering, and you are a little girl, little boy. You walk into a room and you see a line of cocaine on plates on the table. And so that became like a normal for me.
Did you know what that was?
To see that. I knew what it was because we had talked about drugs in school and how to not do drugs. And it was so much of the norm that several family members were involved in this. So, you know, it was her and like her sisters and, you know, it was almost like the parties that you see on TV all the time where there's like liquor, the kids are running around playing, there's lines of Coke on the table, there's straws on the table, and it transformed from cocaine to heroin to where I could remember like what it smells like. Like I know what it smells like walking into a room. And so that became just a normal for us. And they would tell us, and when I say us, I mean like me and my little cousins that would be playing, don't ever do this when you grow up. This is bad for you, while snorting up a line. Oh, okay.
Huh. How did that strike you as a child? Did it strike you as being dishonest on their part? Or?
Well, it was for me, it was kind of like, do as I say, not as I do, right?
Yeah.
You heard that a lot. We heard that a lot growing up, because I said so. But that's not what you're doing. Well, but this is what I told you to do. And so this is what you need to do because I told you to do it, or not do because I told you to do it. And like I said, it became normal for us. And so my grandmother kind of took over raising me as a little girl because, like I said, you know, the more she got involved in this, the more she was slave to the world. And I didn't get to see her very often.
So she was literally gone.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Like she would come around, of course, or she would say, hey, I'm going to run to the store and I'll be back. I'll be right back. Do you need anything? And it would be, you know, 3 days later. You know, I can recall, starting my menstrual cycle and her saying, oh, okay, we talked about it. I'm going to go get you some sanitary napkins. I'll be right back.
And she did.
3 days later.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, I'm glad my grandma's here. or else I would be in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, I would be in trouble. Mm-hmm. And so it was just, it was very interesting. It was just, it was very different, but this really put a wedge because it built a wall up for me. I became very guarded, did not trust anyone really because I didn't grow up with her doing what she said she was going to do when she said she was going to do it. And so I just assumed that most people were like that. And if I wanted things to get done, I just had to do it myself, which has been hard, you know, later in life. It kind of turns into, oh, well, she likes to control all the things. And it's like, well, that's not really what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to make sure that it gets done and that I don't get stressed out about it.
Right. A survival skill, really.
Yeah.
I mean, as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. And Meredith, I can remember, you know, we lived and, you know, my brother was here and we lived with my grandmother because we did lose everything. Like we lost everything.
Your house?
We lost our house. She lost her job with the state of Illinois. Even our items were in storage. I no longer have a baby book. Like all of those are gone. We lost everything. Everything was gone. And so there was just, you know, as the years went by and me being able to recognize all of the things that I lost, mm-hmm. I started to punish her for that. There's this story where she was leaving and she said, oh, I'll be back. And I told her, if you leave, I'm going to throw all of your shoes away.
Was this your way of trying to get her to stay?
Yeah,
or just you were just angry with her?
Yeah, I was angry and I wanted her to stay because I knew that if she left, she wasn't coming right back mm-hmm. and I needed for her to stay. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, oh, you know, stop it. I'll be right back. And she did not come back and I threw all of her shoes away.
Oh my goodness.
And so she came home with the shoes that she was wearing and those are the only shoes she had left. And I remember that she went to like, you know, punish me, like spank me for it. And my grandmother said, don't you lay a hand on her. You're the one who's been gone for days. You leave her alone.
That was a shift of power, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was like, that's right. I see my grandma's got my back. Like, you know, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I recall journaling when I was little. And, you know, granted, my grandmother, she always had us in church. Every Sunday, we were in church. So we grew up in church. We grew up in the Word. But I remember not only being angry with her, but then also being angry with God. Like, what is happening with my mother? Like, mm-hmm. why do I have her as a mom? Mm-hmm. And I just remember writing repeatedly in my journal, I hate my mom. I hate my mom. I hate mm-hmm. my mom. Just like over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just so, like, so much anger just, you know, built up because of all of that. And then I also began to really dislike and despise anybody that had anything to do with her addiction to drugs.
Which would be like who? Friends?
Yeah, like my aunts, my brother's father, like anybody that she would ever hang out with that I would see. Specifically, like, so I don't know what it's called technically, but what you use to grind spices with. It's like a stone and it has a...
Okay, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I always thought that that was used to grind your drugs with. I thought that that's why it was made.
That's what they're for.
Because that's the only time I ever saw it. And it wasn't until I was an adult walking into the cooking store in the mall and I saw one of those and I'm like, are they allowed to have that in here? I mean, granted, I was in my 20s and I was like, I think it's illegal for them to have that in here. And my friend looked at me and they're like, no. That's used to like grind fresh spices. And I'm like, really? Is it now? Because that's not what it was used
for. I've never seen that.
At my house growing up.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So it's just.
Mm-hmm. So this started when you were 7 or 8. How long? I mean,
yeah.
All through your teenage years?
This went all through sophomore year high school.
Wow.
And so what happened with that? Granted, I had my grandmother. I had a lot of teachers that came alongside me. Being in Brownies was helpful because our Brownie troop leader, you know, everyone planted seeds along the way or tried to intervene along the way. There were a lot of, you know, I'm going to have a, talking to my mom, like, stop doing this. You have a beautiful daughter. You know, there were lots of those kind of conversations along the way.
Trying to intervene.
Yes, yes. But at the end of the day, it wasn't until she was ready to completely surrender to the Lord and what he had for her that happened. And that did not happen until I was 15, a sophomore in high school. And she was caught stealing. And this was, you know, not the first offense. It was multiple. And so the judge sent her away to prison. And her being in prison was probably the best thing that happened to the both of us, because that's when she was able to reconnect with the Lord. And when she came back, it allowed us to start to rebuild our relationship.
Prison had given Valina's mom a fresh start, but there were a lot of years and a lot of anger and disappointment built up. Valina had learned to do life on her own. At least, that's what she thought. God was about to get her attention. That is coming up in part two of Epic. Welcome back to Epic. On our website, myfaithradio.com, you can find the podcasts of this and other episodes of Epic and share those with a friend if you like. A great way to listen to Epic is through the Faith Radio app. You can listen to the live stream, access shows you've missed, read the newest articles, and more. When you download the app, you can find it in your phone's app store. Today, we're hearing Valina Claiborne's story. When drug addiction took over her mom's life, Valina lost so much, but a prison sentence and an encounter with Jesus changed her mom's life. Could God restore what was lost? This is part two of Valina's story.
It wasn't until she was ready to completely surrender to the Lord and what he had for her that that happened. And that did not happen until I was 15, a sophomore in high school, and she was caught stealing. And so the judge sent her away to prison. And her being in prison was probably the best thing that happened to the both of us, because that's when she was able to reconnect with the Lord. And when she came back, it allowed us to start to rebuild our relationship. But it did take time.
How long was she in prison?
So she was sentenced 3 years. She served a year and a half.
And did you have connection with her during that time?
Very minimal. I believe I went to go see her maybe once. I don't think I ever wrote any letters. She wrote letters, but I didn't write any letters. We were with my grandmother the whole time, which was a blessing. Mm-hmm. By the time she got out, it was going into senior year. And so she missed a huge
part of your life.
Chunk of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She missed that.
Really, so, had missed all of your life since you were seven, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so it was just kind of weird having her back, because I knew, like, my grandmother raised, like, you don't disrespect your parents. So I knew I had to respect her. But at the same time, I'm like,
you didn't respect her.
I don't think
her.
You can tell me what to do. Like, you haven't been here. I got this.
Did she move in with you and your grandma?
Yeah, she moved in because she came home on house arrest. Mm-hmm. So she moved in. And so, you know, that was just kind of different. My brother was younger, so of course he was really excited to have her back.
Of course.
And then me, not so much. I felt like she was invading my space. And I think that she could sense that a little bit, because she did tread lightly, which I think was good, because I will push back. Like, that's just... that's
your personality?
That's my personality. I will push back. So she did tread lightly, and so... We did have some moments where she would sit down and talk to me and apologize. She did apologize, which was great. At the time, it didn't mean anything.
I was going to say, how did you receive it when she said it? Did you think it was sincere?
Well, you know, I was a teenager.
Yeah.
You know, you think senior year, high school, and you're just like, okay, mom, great. Okay. And so a part of me was happy that she was back, because when there were, you know, events at the school where your parents were supposed to be there, she could actually be there. Mm-hmm. But then I was just like, okay, she's just saying that because that's what she's supposed to say, like, because she's the mom type thing, you know. Yeah. But it wasn't until years later that I began to process this, you know, with the Lord versus just saying, I'm going to handle it myself. And so, you know,
I was going to say, you had mentioned you were angry with God when you were younger. Did that carry on even past the point when your mom came home?
Yeah, so... me connecting with the Lord did not happen until 2006.
How old were you then?
26.
Okay.
Because that was a time in my life where I was pretty much put in a position where he was all I had, right? He's good about that.
He really is.
He's good about that. And so we were able to hash out a lot of different things during that time, mm-hmm. right? And he was able to talk to me about many things, and my relationship with her was one of them. Because at the end of the day, she is like my biggest cheerleader and my biggest fan. And what I had to come to realize is that he was protecting me during this time because I felt like that he just kind of left me to drown. I felt like, hey, you know that I can't swim. You put me in this lake with no lifeguard and you just left me here to drown. Mm-hmm. I'm mad at you. You suck. You
know, that's just to be plain.
Yeah. Just, you know, hey, this is how I feel about you. And so he made it clear to me during that season in 2006. I was with you then and I'm with you now. You didn't go into the DCFS system. You did not get raped when you were with your mother, when she was with the random people partying. You were protected. You were able to focus on school because of the environment that your grandmother provided for you. You were protected. I protected you, but I didn't see it until I was 26 years old. And so during that time, I was able to reconnect with him and just, you know, and just tell him that I was sorry for the way that I spoke to him and how angry I was with him because he protected me during that time and I didn't even realize it. Yeah. So getting through that and just spending time still processing with her, there were still moments throughout the season where I would have bouts of like disappointment. It was more disappointment than anger because she wasn't the mom that I thought she should be.
Had she remained clean since prison?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. She actually went back to school, got her degree and was a drug rehab counselor for Prairie Center for many years before she retired and she's home now.
Wow.
Yeah. But granted, I had to learn to understand that she was picking up where she left off. So where she left off was when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. And so that's where she was picking up. Well, now I'm in my 20s, married, having children, you know, going through my own life. And she's still back here. And so it took a while for me to understand that I needed to love her for who she is. And just be honored, for one, that she's here and that we've been able to reconnect. And two, that she is loving me in the best way that she knows how. And so while processing all of that, you know, God, he kind of brought to my attention because I'm the type of person where it's like, hey, if I can't trust you and I can't love you, you're done, right?
I'm cutting you off.
Yeah, you're cut off. And over the years I have learned, okay, well, I can't completely cut them off because God wouldn't like that. So
what was the next best thing?
So we're going to operate like in an onion. Uh-huh. And so maybe you're not like in the center of the onion, but mm-hmm. you could be out here because you are a child of God. So I'm going to love you in the name of Jesus, but you're not coming up in here because you're going to hurt me and I don't want you to do that. So you're going to be right here. This is where you, so that's kind of where she was. And so, and the God, you know, God just said, you know, hey, you need to not push her away. You need to love her. And then it brought to mind the story of like Ruth and Naomi. Your people are my people. Where you go, I will go. Your God is my God. You will go where she goes. She is your people. She is your biggest fan. I am your God. I am her God. You will not push her away.
That requires her. A deep intimacy.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Doesn't it? And so that's kind of where we are right now, where it's like I am learning to trust her again. And I have gotten to the point where it's like, you know what? I see that you've got my back no matter what. I see that your God is my God. And where you go, I will go. And, you know, we're gonna reach people for the kingdom together. And so it's been a very, very interesting journey. And we still have that weird mother-daughter, you know, dynamic. We try to take a trip together every year, every summer.
I like how you said we try to.
Yeah, we try to. Yeah. And so like after day two, I'm just about like, Mom, I'm going over here to read by myself. Okay.
Yeah.
Like where are you going to be? Because I'm not going to be where you're going to be for just a little bit. And then we can come back. Like where are you? I don't want to be there.
That's an incredible story of God's faithfulness. God is all about restoration.
Yes.
Right. And so, but sometimes there are places in our life where we don't want to be restored.
That's right.
You know, and it sounds like there was a time when that's where you were. That's okay. You can restore all this stuff over here. I'm happy with, but let's don't bother with this.
Yeah. Let's don't bother with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly where I was. Cause I mean, I was under the impression that all these years I handled it by myself and he had to show me, look, little girl, you ain't do nothing by yourself. Let me show you what I did for you. And I think that happens often with us, that he has to show us like, you don't run this. I run this.
Yeah. for somebody who's listening to this and they feel like they have in a very healthy way coped with a really bad dysfunctional relationship and mm-hmm. they have that person at arm's length. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that is for safety. That's good.
That's
right?
The best thing to do sometimes.
So
yeah.
Discerning that is one thing. But let's just say there's a conviction that this really isn't about safety. This is just really about me and my onion layers. And I want to mm-hmm, keep predicting. Mm-hmm. What would your words of advice be to somebody who's in that position?
So, of course, if someone is at arm lengths because of safety, you know, God gave us common sense. Let's just use that. Okay. If someone is at arm's length because of our comfort or because of our feelings, you know, I talked a lot about safety, not wanting people to hurt, you know, safety as in hurting my feelings, guarding mm-hmm. my feelings type thing. I have to remind myself of this often. And my advice to them is the kingdom is more important than your feelings, period. And if you can learn to see others the way that God sees them, you know, that's a prayer to pray. Like, Lord, allow me to see them the way that you see them and love them and the way that's best for them. Not in the way that's best for you or for me or that feels good to us or that's convenient for us. How can I love them in a way that's best for them? It's going to be inconvenient. It's not going to feel good. But guess what? They're going to feel loved. Going on a vacation with my mother for 3 days does not always feel good. However, it's what's best for her. And in the long run, it's what's best for me because the Lord is using it to shape me and to grow me. And so that is what my advice would be. Learn who they are. Learn who God sees them as. And just remember that your feelings, at the end of the day, where the kingdom is concerned, your feelings don't matter. They don't matter. They just don't. They don't. Like, yeah, you know. We're here to follow Jesus. And so we can hash out all those feelings with him.
Two things. One I wanted to ask about is just, you know, obviously his heart is for restoration. And so when you follow that, what you hope is that you're not only just being obedient, but that you see fruit from that mm-hmm. that makes it worthwhile.
Right.
Would you say that's the case with your mom?
Yeah. And you know, not every situation was their fruit. Not at all. And there are times when I would go back home and I would talk to my husband. I would say something like, I don't even know why I set myself up for that again. I don't know why I thought the response was going to be any different than it was before. And he had to remind me, yeah, but remember why you were doing this. This was probably good for her. Like, it was probably good for her to hear that. Even if you don't think she heard you, I'm pretty sure she heard you. And again, it just goes back to sometimes we plant seeds and we do works and we're not supposed to be doing it for us anyway. And we may not even see the end result. And we just have to be okay with that. It doesn't make it any easier, but you just have to be okay with it. But no, there are times where I'm just like, that just went in one ear and out the other.
Yeah.
Like, why did I even waste my breath doing that? Mm-hmm. But it wasn't for me.
Well, that takes real maturity to be at a place where you're willing to do that, which explains why at 17, when she came home and apologized, it probably didn't matter.
It didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At that point, it didn't matter.
At some point along the way, though, I assume in that restoration process, God led you to choose to forgive her, right? I assume the choice came before the feeling came. I mean, do you remember, was that a long process or do you remember a decisive moment when it was like, oh, I really do have to forgive her?
Yeah. I think that the forgiveness of her came. So remember, my parents got divorced when I was younger, when I was two. And, you know, there was anger there because dad wasn't there mm-hmm. either. So there was forgiveness on both ends that had to happen. And so there was a distinct moment where, I've been in social work since I was like 19. I think the Lord, you know, the Lord plays too much. He knew what he was doing.
It's a little ironic, isn't it?
It is, right? Mm-hmm. Because I remember, you know, saying things like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired of helping people. Somebody just needs to come help me. But I remember I worked with the mental health center. And I remember working an overnight one night thinking, man, because I always desired to be a mother. But I remember thinking, man, if I ever lose my mind one day, I really pray that my children will still love me, that they won't turn their back on me or disrespect me. And so it's like that was taken in regards to forgiveness to my mom. Like, you know, she did kind of lose her mind. So am I going to love her? So it's like all of that anger for all of them, for all the people that I was angry with, that I blamed, you know, for her involvement with that. It did turn into compassion, because it was like, you know what? There's no way that you were in your right mind during that time. Mm. And so I just pray if I lose my mind one day that my children just don't abandon me and that they will be by my side. So, you know, let me be by your side too, because that's what I would want.
Valina says that process of restoration of the relationship, it's ongoing. Her mom frequently expresses her sorrow and all that was lost. But Valina says, we can't go back. So they try to keep their focus on what's ahead and working to build new memories. And what Valina's mom missed out on in her childhood, she gets to experience with Valina's children, her grandchildren. So there are so many good things ahead. Big thank you to Valina for sharing her story with us today. We believe everybody has a chapter in God's great big story. Tell us about yours at myfaithradio.com. Today's show was produced by Jason Rakow and Ted Ross. Our theme song was written by Stephen Johnson. And I'm your host, Meredith Foster. See you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Every episode of Epic is made possible by people like you. You can make a gift today at myfaithradio.com. And if you love the show, let others know about it by sharing this audio link. You can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast player.